Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. In this hour, we're taking a look back on last weekend's storms that caused flash flooding and millions of dollars in damage across northern Wisconsin.
Yeah, we got caught in the storm. We could smell the ozone. Lightning was all around us. We figured we better get off the river. As soon as we pull away in the canoe, it starts raining. Torrential downpour.
Yeah, we were soaked.
It's not a problem except getting out of my house to come down the road. There's backed up. I think it's 2.5 miles above traffic backed up.
Just trying to get from here to there, and there's a lot of traffic here that comes cross country. This is a northern route, east-west highway 2. People who live like over by Ashland or Bad River, and they have family or whatever in Minneapolis, for them to get to where they need to go is a real challenge.
It's always a new adventure. You don't know what you're going to be up against next.
People are just beginning to settle in for a long recovery, and some roads are still underwater. Governor Scott Walker declared a state of emergency on Monday for Douglas, Ashland, Bayfield, Burnett, and Iron counties. The National Guard has also been activated to help communities in northern Wisconsin. Now counties and towns are trying to assess the damage and determine just how much it will cost to repair roads. Bayfield County saw some of the heaviest rains over the weekend, with 15 inches recorded near Drummond. The county's emergency management director, Jan Victorson, spoke with me yesterday by phone about the work that's ongoing.
Well, we have several roads that have been opened throughout the county, but there are still more roads closed in our towns than are open. So I would suggest that people always check, you know, the websites in any of the counties who've been affected in terms of what roads are open and what is closed. If they're concerned about something in the real local level, I would encourage them to contact their local road folks or their town chairs, because they will have an idea of when things are being fixed or what things have been fixed.
Well, and how difficult has it been to coordinate schedules or just talk to town folks about what it is that they're seeing?
We have been lucky in that we have not had the power outages that sometimes accompany these kinds of storms. So we've been able to rely pretty heavily on our ability to communicate electronically and been gathering a lot of information from our towns. They have been incredibly responsive in terms of estimates of the damages. And we're coming in with some pretty high numbers. It's pretty remarkable.
What are you seeing so far as estimates?
We probably, counting just town damage, we're certainly over $3 million. And that's continuing even through the day as those numbers are coming in. I'm guessing we are going to be over $4 and $5 million pretty quickly.
And how does that compare to what you saw a couple years ago?
There are some similarities, but we have, you know, different towns affected. Two of the towns that have most heavily been impacted are right in the center of our county rather than being on the edges bleeding into other counties. So that has been kind of, a different dynamic in terms of, you know, how we've been affected here. When it comes right out of the middle of your county, that makes a difference in terms of how you can get from one place to another, et cetera.
Right. It seems like it kind of was a little bit more concentrated but heavier in some places. I'm just thinking about the Drummond area and the damage.
Well, the Drummond area is huge in terms of damage, as is the town of Delta, the town of Mason, the town of Keystone, that whole central area of our county. Highway 63 is still covered by a couple of feet of water in the Bibbin area, and it just doesn't have anywhere to go. So it's not going down as we were hoping. So we're encouraging people to continue to find good workarounds. It's certainly be driving safely throughout. Look at those signs. Make sure you know what they say. And, boy, you know, purchase a road map. It might, you know, help you get, you know, find some alternative routes if you run into a road closed sign.
And what are you hearing from your road crews? I know they're struggling to, you know, either block off roads or, you know, open them back up and doing work on them. As everybody's trying to get around and do work and repairs, are they seeing people, you know, for the large part, avoiding those areas?
They are. For the most part, what I'm hearing from people is that the people that they've been meeting with or talking with have been very understanding, understand there's been a lot of road damage, and are working with that as best they can.
Okay.
So, basically the feeling from the town crews is that people are being pretty positive. However, there's always those unsafe situations, and, the person who goes a little too fast for the area, you know, those kinds of things that are of, you know, big concern.
So do you feel like you have an idea yet of all of the areas that were hit now?
I think we know all of the areas that were hit. We do not have good numbers yet from all of those areas in terms of the estimate of damages. As I said, that's coming in.
And how has it been working with, have you been getting a lot of help from the state folks as far as trying to address some of these issues you're seeing there in the county?
Well, I think the fact that the governor declared a state of emergency the other day was very helpful. We are looking at the potential of help having the National Guard help us perhaps with some assessments and, you know, developing missions that will be helpful to our local towns. Our highway department has been great at finding, you know, trying to find some resources that would be workable for our local jurisdictions. The state DOT has been very helpful in terms of trying to problem solve some unique situations in some towns. So I'd say, yes, we are getting some assistance, and that's been very helpful.
And how difficult is it to get resources in? Like, if you're going to be repairing roads, how has that been trying to get probably gravel or other materials in to try and do that?
Well, one of the things we're going to be facing soon is that we have contractors that are already too busy to, you know, help out some of these projects that are going to be coming along. Some of these projects are going to be huge. We have reports of roads that have gaping gouges in them that go down 15 feet and go on for half a mile and a mile. So road beds are really destroyed.
And so you might not be able to get the help immediately.
Right. It's going to take some time.
Well, what do you want people to know in the meantime as you're continuing to work through all of this?
I'd like people to take a deep breath, be aware that there are people working very hard to keep them safe, do everything they can, take on their personal responsibility for being safe and taking care of themselves, to drive very carefully, to obey all of the road closure signs, and make some good decisions. I am sure that there are people out there who have had damage to their homes, and maybe they're just beginning to figure that out as well. And we still need people to report that to 211, and we hope to begin following up with those folks if they need follow-up in the next week.
Have you received much information so far from 211?
I think we're up to only about 10 or 12 people reporting so far.
And then mostly like basement and driveway damage and things
Correct.
Like that? Anything else that I'm missing, Jan, that you want to add?
I don't think so, other than one of the things we are trying to do right now is, as we get estimates of damage and try to sort through that information, we are trying to determine what our best source of funding is going to be for our local jurisdictions. And that just takes a little bit of time, and that's my priority in terms of making sure we can offer as many resources, especially funding, to our local jurisdictions as we work through the recovery from this event.
Again, you were just listening to Bayfield County Emergency Management Director Jan Victorson. As the floodwaters begin to subside, road crews are getting a look at the damage and beginning repairs. Diana Moss with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation talks about efforts to reopen state highways damaged by the storms.
So right now, the county has been able to make any quick repairs to County Highway G and open that up as a detour around the washout on US 2 east of Ino. So that's great. We've got County Highway G open. That makes the detour much shorter, a lot simpler, and it's open to cars and trucks, and that's great. That's going to help mobility a great deal. And then the state right now is working to get through an emergency contract, and we're hoping that work could begin next week.
Okay. And once work begins, I mean, what's going to happen with that? Is it going to be designed first, or what are you looking at?
We're going to replace it with a new bridge, a single span bridge. It was a culvert that washed out completely, and we're going to replace it with a new bridge.
Okay. And that could take up to 4 months or maybe even longer?
You know, it's really hard to say until I know that there was a site visit today with state representatives from different contractors. And so, you know, they have to take that hard look at the technical damage and provide what they think can be done in a short time frame, or, you know, or how long it might take to do the full repairs. But we're certainly hopeful that it doesn't take 4 months. You know, in 2016, our biggest area of damage, we repaired in 120 days. And we're certainly hopeful to meet that deadline and get mobility restored on US 2 as soon as possible.
Okay, and I know in addition to US 2, you're also looking at trying to open US Highway 53 back up to four lanes near Bennett and Solon Springs. What's happening with that?
Yeah, so US 53, just want everyone to know, it's still open. It's just open to bidirectional traffic on the northbound lanes. And I drive through it every day, and it's really not much of a delay at all. It's pretty smooth going through there. But we had to do that because a couple culverts washed out on the southbound lanes. And so we actually already are getting work ready to go. And, you know, that's going to be a pretty quick repair. You know, the work's going to begin next week, and we're going to have that open to all four lanes before July 3rd.
Are you looking to kind of get that one done quickly, given that, you know, Independence Day is a pretty big holiday where people want to head north?
Yes, of course. You know, the kind of fortunate thing is that we actually had a scheduled project already in the area. And so we've already got a contractor nearby, and we're able to kind of work through a change order process to get those repairs going faster than if we were to have to set up a whole new project. So absolutely, we always want to have our improvement projects in a good place so that we don't have too much of an impact on the July 4th holiday traffic.
I know you said that it doesn't look like the state highways were hit as bad in this go around as they were in the July 2016 storm. I mean, why is that, or what is it that you're seeing that doesn't look as bad as what we saw a couple of years ago?
Still too early to tell in some places, and I can't speak for the local system, but in terms of our state system, it's just looking like our impacted areas in terms of the dollar amount isn't going to reach what we saw in 2016. You know, we don't have as many washouts or complete washouts. We've got some, you know, a couple minor spots that we can repair pretty quickly, other than, you know, the major washout on US 2 and a bridge issue with Wisconsin 35 through Patterson State Park.
It just doesn't seem to be as widespread, I guess, is what you're saying.
No, it's just a couple spot locations. And honestly, this time we've been, you know, until today, we've kind of just been, there have been areas where the water was still too high to really look at anything. You know, other than the areas that have a long-term repair, the US 2 North Fish Creek, the, you know, the 53 through Solon Springs, and then the bridge at Patterson Park. Everything else is open now, with the exception of 63 in the Bibb and Swamp area, which still has probably about a foot of water over the road. So we're still waiting for water to recede there. When the water goes down, we'll obviously, you know, there'll be debris cleanup, but we're not expecting any significant damage once the water recedes.
Anything else I'm missing that you want to add?
We just encourage any people who are traveling to northern Wisconsin to come on up. You know, we're open. We might have a couple signed detours, but for the most part, everything's open. And, you know, obviously don't drive through standing water if you're driving through the Grandview Bibb and Swamp area. Adhere to sign closures. But follow 511wi.gov for our updated map and updated list of detour routes. But we're committed to restoring mobility as soon as possible and look forward to beginning work on US 2 and 53 next week.
Again, you were just listening to Diana Moss with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. You can find out the latest information on road closures on county websites and state road conditions at 511wi.gov. We're going to take a short break for these announcements. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. Over the last decade, northern Wisconsin has seen several storms bringing heavy rains that are only expected once in a lifetime or once in a millennium. National Weather Service meteorologist Joe Moore spoke with me about last weekend's storms and the record-breaking river flows that came with it.
It was something that we had anticipated for a while. We kind of saw this a week out, that we knew that we were primed for somewhere across the Northland was going to get a lot of heavy precipitation. We just didn't know where and exactly when the flooding concern would start, whether that would be on Saturday or Sunday.
So when did you kind of get the first idea that this was really going to turn into an event?
We started raising the alarms early in the week. The major flooding happened Saturday night, and the previous probably Monday and Tuesday is when we started really ramping up the wording in some of the products that we send out and the messaging that we put on our social media.
And I know that you can never be fully prepared for something like this, but what are some of the things that you go through to prepare for major storm events like this?
Well, one of the things that we look at ahead of time is obviously making sure that our equipment is working and making sure that we have people available. In these situations, we tend to need extra hands on deck to deal with phone calls and extra duties that arise. And so one of the things that we kind of looked at ahead of time was, you know, who is available, when can they come in? And so our staff was very proactive in making sure that we had the right people available and that we knew where everybody was. If someone was available, how could we reach them, that sort of thing.
You know, I always wonder how that goes, because when you have an instance like this where, say it was a flood or a snowstorm, you know, sometimes people get trapped out there in the middle of it. So how do you get people in, or how do you get that information if people can't get into the office?
Yeah, absolutely. And we do have backup procedures. If in case our office couldn't perform our duties, if we had a communications outage, we have two backup offices, the office in the Twin Cities and the office in Grand Forks, North Dakota, that are capable of backing us up in terms of most of the products and services that we handle. But of course, we still would get inundated with phone calls. And so even if our telecommunications went down and our forecasting system went down, we would still probably have a lot to do in terms of phone calls to make.
Well, and I understand that your radar did go down during this storm.
Yeah, we did have a technical issue with the radar Saturday night, just as the storms were starting to approach the Twin Ports. It ended up being a hardware issue that was basically unable to be resolved without a few hours of some hard labor. It was replacing one of the motors, and it's a very heavy part that requires a lot of work to replace. And because the thunderstorms were so near, it was a safety issue that we couldn't get the radar repaired overnight because we had near continuous lightning nearby. So it just wasn't safe for the technician to be up in the radar tower, which is a, you know, giant metal ball sitting in the sky.
I guess, what do you do in an instance like that when you can't rely on it?
Well, just because our radar is down does not mean that there aren't other radars we can use. When we don't have our primary radar available, there are other radars across the upper Midwest that we can use. The coverage won't be as great, but we do have other tools that we can use. Because a lot of this flooding was at night, we couldn't rely on our spotters as much because we simply, usually unless it is a critical situation, we won't call our volunteer spotters who have given us their information and we know where they are to call them. So overnight, we remain relying on tools like our neighboring radar in the Twin Cities. We're using satellite-based tools. We're using automated weather stations across the area, and we're calling the people on the ground. In most cases, we were calling county dispatches for the local sheriffs across the counties in northwest Wisconsin, to kind of get an idea of how bad things were and where conditions were the worst.
And as you're trying to find out that information, what were you seeing on the ground? What were you hearing, at the worst of the storm?
during the worst of the storm, the people that we usually call the emergency dispatch tend to be completely overwhelmed. And so it can definitely be a communications challenge, especially in the overnight hours when we don't have there's not a very active presence on different social media networks. A lot of times the local news is also struggling. So one of the things we used was to get additional information is social media. We will use social media posts by some of the surrounding agencies, news networks. When they make a social media post, we will go and check out the comments to see if there are any reports we can gather there. But it is a struggle. We have automated weather stations, but there's just not a lot of them. And so the rain tends to fall between the stations, and so it can be a challenge of where exactly the rain is falling and what conditions are like on the ground.
So what was it that made this, I don't know if you would call it one storm or a series of storms, was it that made it so severe?
One of the things that made it so severe is that we had a number of rounds of rainfall. We had some rain on Thursday. We had another round of rain on Friday. We had another round of rain on Saturday. And those multiple rounds of rain helped to really saturate the ground. And once the ground becomes saturated, the water tends to just flow to the rivers pretty fast. And the creeks and streams that lead to the rivers tend to be overwhelmed very fast. And so we see small creeks and streams that are usually maybe just a trickle of water become overwhelmed and turn into raging rivers.
And my understanding is that all three major rivers that you were kind of watching out for, I want to say it was the Brule, the Nemadji, and the St. Croix, they all set new records, right?
Yes. Yeah, there were record-setting crests on a number of the river gauges that we have around northwest Wisconsin.
And that was just because of the duration of the storm, like you said, because everything was so saturated, there was just nowhere for this water to go?
Right. There was nowhere for the heavy rainfall to go. A lot of it, the heaviest rainfall that fell in southern Bayfield County was in between the Lake Superior Basin and the St. Croix River Basin. So if all of that would have been in the St. Croix Basin, we would probably still be dealing with even higher levels on the St. Croix. So it certainly could have probably been a little worse because it was split between the two basins, and those Lake Superior streams get to the lake pretty fast. There was probably less of an impact if the rain could have been a little bit further north or south.
Okay. Well, now it's late in the week, and earlier you were worried about flooding around the St. Croix and it still had a flood warning in effect. What is it looking like heading into the weekend?
Heading into the weekend, we are expecting the rivers to continue to go down. There are still road closures due to water over roads in a few parts of Pine and Burnett counties, but in general, conditions should be good. We do expect some showers and thunderstorms over this weekend, but no heavy rainfall is expected. Outside of some small areas, we're not going to see the widespread heavy rain that we did last weekend.
And I know that you had shared an official analysis of the rainfall estimates that we were seeing from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and their Office of Water Prediction.
Yeah.
And that kind of compared what you would historically see in these regions to what we saw in this storm. You know, we were seeing in some places 100 to 1,000 year rainfalls.
Yeah, the rainfall rates that fell, whether you look at it on a 6-hour basis or over 24 hours, the intensity of the rainfall over southern Douglas and southern Bayfield counties approached the kind of intensity that we would normally expect in 1 in 1,000 years.
Well, and that's kind of interesting because we've seen events like this in the last decade, a couple other events, a couple other storms. So is this just kind of the new normal now heading into the future?
It's hard to make trends in a short amount of time like that, but we certainly have had a series of heavy rainfall events that have produced flooding. The 2016 floods across northwest Wisconsin were similarly intense, and they fell over a very similar area. But it's hard to say whether this is a trend or whether it's simply just bad luck of having these extreme rainfall events happen so close to each other in terms of, you know, just 2 years apart and almost nearly the same area.
So are you getting used to this?
You know, we're used to having flooding events every few years for our office, which covers northeast Minnesota and northwest Wisconsin. Usually somewhere there's always going to be some type of extreme weather. It doesn't impact everybody, but this is why it's really important that people prepare for this sort of thing. This extreme rainfall could have happened in anyone's backyard, wherever you are in Minnesota or Wisconsin or Michigan. This is not something that, you know, just happens to happen right over a certain area of land. So this is why it's really important that, you know, people need to be ready for this sort of thing. Have a kit, have a plan to escape if you need to escape. Make sure you prepare supplies if you are cut off from the outside world, if you can't travel, if a road does get washed out. Even if you live in a town and you think you might be safe, there were some larger towns that did get cut off for a while, and so it's important to have a kit and be prepared.
Well, anything that you're going to be changing or that the National Weather Service office is looking at, you know, for future storms that they might have to forecast like this?
In the future, we're going to continue to look at how we can improve our messaging to make sure that people understand the severity of rainfall, especially when we're talking about, you know, a day or two ahead of time, to make sure that residents understand the extreme possibilities that are possible. When the rainfall is far out, we're pretty good idea of giving a broad general idea of, you know, heavy rain is possible. And of course, you might hear that multiple times a year that, oh, a heavy rain is going to be possible with this, flooding is possible. But trying to communicate, especially in the times when people can really take action to make those final preparations, to communicate better the risk.
Again, that was meteorologist Joe Moore with the National Weather Service office in Duluth. We're going to take a short break for these announcements. Up next, President Donald Trump stirred up supporters at the Amsoil Arena in Duluth this week. We bring you some of what he had to say on national security, the economy, and immigration. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Donald Trump stopped in Superior a couple years ago as a candidate. Fast forwarded this week, and the now president of the United States stopped in Duluth to rev up his Republican base and throw his support behind GOP congressional candidate Pete Stauber in the 8th District race. More than 8,000 people showed up for Wednesday's rally. Here now is a portion of the president's speech before a packed house at the Amsoil Arena.
I am thrilled to be back in the great state of Minnesota with truly some of the most incredible people anywhere on earth. You know that. And you know, I hate to bring this up, but we came this close to winning the state of Minnesota. And in 2.5 years, it's going to be really easy, I think. Really easy. It's been many, many decades since the Republican did that, and I thought I was going to do it. I needed one more visit, one more speech. That's why never give up. Never, ever give up. One more speech. Now, we're very proud of Minnesota. Let me also say, congratulations to the Bulldogs on winning the NCAA championship hockey tournament. Wow, that's a big deal. Right in this arena, this is where they play, right? Boy, I hear they're a great team. And how many are going to the NHL? How many? Two, three? That's a lot. They're going to do it. Great team. Thank you. Great team. The Bulldogs. So we're honored to be joined tonight by many wonderful Republican leaders, including our incredible House Majority Leader, Kevin McCarthy. Kevin, come up, please. Where's Kevin? Where is he? Kevin. He sends a lot of money this way, I want to tell you. I also want to thank, and maybe just ask him to come up. We have all night long, right? Do we have time? All night. We're not going anywhere. Some great people, Congressman Sean Duffy. Great champion. Come up, Sean. Great champion. You know the whole thing, going up the trees and down the trees. Number one in the world for 4 or 5 years. Come here. With a great, great wife, by the way. Very talented. Tom Emmer, congressman, loves this state. And a very popular man in the state of Minnesota, Jason Lewis. I also want to thank Lieutenant Governor Michelle Fischbach for being here. She has been so great. Got a big race coming along. It's going to do great. Along with State Senator Karen Housley. Karen, come on up here. Get him up here. Where are you? Stay there. Too much of a deal. Good luck. Karen, good luck. Michelle, thank you. Also, a friend of mine and a man who's been incredible and a great supporter, Minnesota Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka. And Minnesota Republican Party Chair Jennifer Carnahan, who has been fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. And finally, the person we're all here to support tonight, somebody who's very special, by the way, loves ice hockey. Real ice hockey family. In fact, his brother, you know. The coach of the winning women's team in the Olympics. Not bad. Great family. The next congressman from Minnesota's 8th Congressional District, the great Pete Stauber. Come on up. I'll tell you, is this a pretty good send-off for Pete? This is not bad, right? Hey, Pete. Come here. Say a few words. He wasn't supposed to do this, but let's hear him, right? Come on. Come on.
Thank you, Mr. President. Welcome to the city of Duluth and the great state of Minnesota. And as you alluded to, the home of college hockey's national champions, the University of Minnesota Duluth Bulldogs. I'm Pete Stauber, and I'm running in Minnesota's 8th Congressional District because, like President Trump, I love this country. I love our freedoms, and I love our Constitution. Mr. President, before your election, you made a promise to visit Minnesota, and you promised more jobs, fewer regulations, and a better economy for everyone. Now, jobs are up, unemployment numbers are at a historic low, small businesses and manufacturers are surging, and optimism is at an all-time high. Because of you. My blue-collar, common-sense, conservative message is resonating throughout the 8th District. Mr. President, these people support you. And Mr. President, these are the same people that are going to send me to Washington so together we can unleash the economic engine in northern Minnesota. On behalf of the Minnesotans here today, thank you for coming to our great state and for always putting America and the American worker first. Thank you. God bless America.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So I didn't know he was going to do that. And then he takes out a speech and reads it. I said, that's pretty good. He is a great guy, and he loves you, and he loves this country, and he's going to do fantastically. He's going to win. We're going to keep on winning. Remember, I used to say in a little jest, but I really meant it, we're going to win so much. Remember? We're going to win, win, win. That's what we're doing. Remember, I said your governor or your senator or Pete or somebody, they're going to come into Washington and say, Mr. President, please, we're winning too much. The people of Minnesota cannot stand winning so much. Please, can we take it easy? And I said, no, we're going to keep winning, winning, winning. So we've created 3.4 million new jobs since Election Day. 3.4. And I've said before, if I would have said that to you during the campaign, those very dishonest people back there, the fake news, very dishonest. They would have said he's exaggerating. These are very dishonest people, many of them, and we have some fine people, too, doing that. But there's a lot of very dishonest people. For instance, I just got back, as you know, from Singapore, where I met Kim Jong-un. And we had a great meeting, great chemistry. We got along really well, which is very important. They didn't want us to, but, it's, nice to do that. And very interestingly, at first, everybody was amazed that we had the meeting. They couldn't believe it. The first 24 hours, they said, I can't believe it. You remember that a while ago? They said, they're going to meet. Then about a day later, they said, what's the big deal with the meeting? What's the big deal? In other words, their bosses said, you can't say that. But the beauty was this. So we had a meeting. It was an incredible success. And they said, the president gave away so much. He met with them. I said, what else? I met. What am I supposed to do? I had to meet, right? He met. Now, sentence one says a total denuclearization of North Korea. That's what it says. We got back our hostages. And I didn't pay $1.8 billion to get back our hostages. We got back our great fallen heroes, the remains. In fact, today already 200 have been sent back. They stopped shooting missiles over Japan. They stopped all nuclear testing. They stopped nuclear research. They stopped rocketry. They stopped everything that you'd want them to stop, and they blew up sites where they test and do the testing. And it was a great meeting, and Kim Jong-un will turn down, and I will tell, he will turn, Chairman Kim will turn that country into a great, successful country. And let me tell you this. A year and a half ago, nobody thought that was possible. In fact, before I was elected, everybody assumed we were going to war. It would be a vicious war. In Seoul, you have 28 million people living 30 miles off the border. They don't even need nuclear weapons for that. They have thousands of cannons aiming right on top of Seoul. You could have lost millions and millions of people. But I got along with Kim Jong-un. I got along. And that's a good thing, not a bad thing. And these people, you remember, I said, I can't believe it. He's given away so much. You know what I gave away? A meeting. That was a meeting. And the fact that we do get along means we're safe. I'm not saying things can't happen. Things go wrong. Mistakes are made. Relationships get broken. But right now, you are so safe, and such a great event took place, and all over Asia. And all over Asia, they're celebrating the great achievement that we made, because you were the ones that put me here. We made. All over Asia. And really all over the world. And by the way, in our country, everybody knows what a great achievement this is, not only for us, but for North Korea, for South Korea, for Japan, for China, for everybody. And I have to say, you know, you've been reading where I've been putting very large tariffs on China. Very, very large. We hit the $250 billion mark. But I want to say, and that we have to do that, because it has to be balanced, it has to be fair. It wasn't fair. China and President Xi has really helped us a lot at the border of North Korea, really helped us a lot, and he's a friend of mine. He's a friend of mine. So you should be very proud of yourselves for what took place, because that was very close to war for many years. Many years, it was very, very close. And now we can have something where everybody is going to live in peace for a long period of time, and there will be denuclearization. So that's the real story. Thank you. That's the real story. So unemployment numbers are among the best in the history of our country. African American unemployment is at its lowest level in the history of our country. Hispanic American unemployment has reached its lowest level ever recorded in the history of our country. And remember, I'd go into big stadiums like this that were packed. And by the way, You're very good at real estate. Did you see the thousands and thousands of people outside that will never be reported by the fake news, but the thousands of people that couldn't get in? Many thousands. They're all over. The parking lots, they're all over. And it would be great if the cameras could take a shot of the arena. So usually they don't do it. And I usually go home and my wife would say, how was the crowd? Although, honestly, when you have many thousands of people like we have tonight, you know, I was at an event 3 weeks ago where a person from the New York Times said there was only 1,000 people. And the people, the many thousands that were there, protested. I didn't even have to do it. And they wrote a slight correction. They were off by many thousands of people. That's the way it is. It's fake news, I'm telling you. So fake. But usually they don't show the arena. They just show my face. So people would say, did you have many people there? Oh, didn't you see? No, no, they've only showed your face. And we all have ego. But I don't want to show my face. I want to show the crowds. It's much prettier. Because you people are incredible. Unemployment among women has reached the lowest level as of today in 65 years. 65 years. And most importantly of all, America is respected again. We're respected. We're fighting to protect American iron, aluminum, and steel, and to protect our incredible and very brave miners. But I'll tell you, to keep this incredible momentum, I think maybe the most successful that the country has ever had. I think we are now at the most successful level that the country has ever seen. That's how we're doing. And let me just tell you, because I hear a couple of the fakers the other day said, well, I think it's Obama's economy. Obama's economy. Obama. They want to put on more regulations. They want to take back your tax cuts, which are massive. They want to take them back, and they want to raise the hell out of your taxes, and the whole thing will go boom. So we need more Republicans. We got to get out there in the midterm. We got to get more Republicans. Got to get more Republicans. A vote for a Democrat for Congress is really a vote for Nancy Pelosi and her radical agenda. Democrats want to raise your taxes, increase your regulations, shut down American energy, take over American health care, which has been a disaster with Obamacare, and ship away American jobs. And that's what they will do. If anything bad happens to this country, it will be a disaster for all of you, but we're not going to let it happen. We worked too hard to get here. And the greatest phrase, I think, in the history of politics is on all of those red and white hats that I see out there, make America great again. And that's exactly what we're doing. Make America great again. And you know what our new phrase is in 2.5 years. You know what it is, right? Keep America great. That's what it is, because that's where we are. So the Democrats want open borders. Let everybody come in. Let everybody pour in. We don't care. Let them come in from the Middle East. Let them come in from all over the place. We don't care. We're not going to let it happen. And by the way, today I signed an executive order. We're going to keep families together, but the border is going to be just as tough as it's been. Democrats don't care about the impact of uncontrolled migration on your communities, your schools, your hospitals, your jobs, or your safety. Democrats put illegal immigrants before they put American citizens. What the hell is going on? Illegal immigration costs our country hundreds of billions of dollars. So imagine if we could spend that money to help bring opportunity to our inner cities and our rural communities and our roads and our highways and our schools. So we've already started the wall. We got $1.6 billion. The wall has been started. San Diego and lots of different places. And we go, but boy, it's tough. They want to do anything they can to obstruct and to make sure it doesn't happen. But it's happening. It's happening.
Again, you were just listening to President Donald Trump speaking at the Amsoil Arena in Duluth on Wednesday. You can hear his entire speech on our website at wpr.org/superior. And you can fact check his remarks at npr.org. That's it for our program. I'm Danielle Kading, and you've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We hope to have you back with us again next Friday. Until then, have a great weekend.